Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Voice of the People. It's your man, Dean Geronimo. I'm here in the studio. Tonight, we're going to have Ms. Jasmine Truesdale with us, and she's going to talk about a new comic that she's working on. Jasmine, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm making it, trying to. Anyway, we're going to see if Ty rings in, and we should be coming up with Mark Lee, too. Ty Jones is actually the host of the Voice of the People. Mark Lee is the co-host, and I am the producer, or whatever you want to call it. The way it's written up here, it says the African-American community is a major buyer of video games and comic books. There's still not a lot of representation in terms of characters with minorities, women, and those of different lifestyles. And you're looking to change that and creating your own media empire that you hope will challenge many of those stereotypes. And yes, Charleston did have an impact on what you're creating. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Jasmine Truesdale, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and give us...
Absolutely.
Okay, give us a little bit of background, I guess, about yourself, and then about what you're working on.
Actually, I'm recent grad.
Okay.
I own a couple of other companies. One is a consulting firm, and another one is a fitness company. So I literally had no background in this whatsoever. But I originally started making a game for my fitness company, and then I realized what I was creating were superheroes. And me, I grew up reading comics and, you know, following Wonder Woman and Vixen and Black Canary and all of that. I literally have a storage unit full of comic books. And I just said, you know, well, if I'm going to sit here and go through all of this for a fitness game, why don't I actually just do superheroes? And so it just, I don't know how to, I told Mark, I don't know how to think small. So it just kind of took on a life of its own. And next thing I knew, I started off creating one character, Kala, who's the lead character. She's my African-American superheroine who's from the Gullah Islands of Charleston, South Carolina. And then after that, I started developing more characters, and then I started actually piecing together this multicultural league of female superheroes, one girl that represents each of the five major ethnic groups of the entire world. And I was like, boom, I have my team, I have my league, I have my girls right here. So it just kind of took on a life of its own, I guess.
So, okay. Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you a question. Do your characters speak Gullah, or in the book?
She does speak the Creole language. Yes, she does. It was actually my stepmother who brought it up, because I said I need a girl to be in America. Because the other girls are from all over the world. One's from Mumbai, the other one's from London, another one's from Seoul, Korea, another one's from Bogota, Colombia. And I said, I need someone in America. And then my stepmom said, well, why don't you put her in the Gullah Islands? And I was like, oh, get out. So all of the girls, like their backgrounds, they don't actually come from Earth. They come from other planets. That there's this kind of mythology to the way that the universe works, that the different realms of the universe explains the different ethnicities here on Earth. The people here on Earth are actually refugees from a great war that happened like millennia ago, and they came to Earth to find, I guess, refuge from the war. And so the girls are sent here, hidden on Earth, until they grow up and develop into their powers to then fight this even bigger evil, who is essentially Kala's dad. So Kala, her whole entire character is based off of the female warriors of Africa. So there are plenty of, if anyone okay. knows anything about African history, I mean, up and down Africa, there are plenty of statues and tributes to the female warriors throughout pre-colonialism, fighting colonialism, and Kala's character is based entirely after those women. And so her culture, her planet, all of that, I needed to have a place here in America where the Gullah Islands is pretty much built after the former slaves, where that still maintain a lot of those African traditions. And I said, that's great. She can still be American. She can still have those, like, African roots in terms of she's immersed into a culture that's very similar to her own on her own on her home planet. And I can kind of get a little bit of the best of all of the worlds right here in this one little area in America. So that's kind of okay. how that came to be.
How it came about. Now, when you I guess I should ask, you gave me the background on all of the characters. Are they time travelers?
No. They're more space travelers. One of them can open okay. portals. She can literally go wherever she needs to be, anywhere. But there's a lot of, I say that, I guess one of the reporters who interviewed me called it a space opera. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like science fiction meets the superhero genre. So I kind of literally took these two different things and merged them together into almost like the space soap opera kind of thing that people can really sort of get their teeth into and just really follow a story. But okay. no time travelers. Not yet. Maybe
no time travelers.
Probably do
well,
that.
I just had just a curiosity question of my own. I mean, I see you were featured in Madame Noir magazine.
I was.
And it's saying, you know, you're doing to the comic book industry what Shonda Rhimes did to primetime television. So, you know, adding a splash of color and diversifying it. You know, with mm-hmm. a badass league of multicultural female superheroes, you hope to prove to DC and Marvel, the comic book bigwigs, that black and female superheroes are in. On that one point right there, how big would it be to have, I guess, your characters be either considered in that same league with Marvel and DC, or even to have it brought to a bigger screen, such as all of the Marvel movies that are coming out now?
It would be pretty incredible. That's actually where I'm headed. Like, when I was talking to Mark, I told him, you know, I'm a business person first. So I worked in risk. So whenever mm-hmm. I'm creating anything, any product, I'm already thinking 5 or 6 steps ahead in terms of where is this going to go. So whereas a lot of artists, when they're creating their product, they're just trying to put it out there and they just hope people buy it. Me, I'm banking on people buying this. I'm talking okay. to the public. I'm getting what they want, and I'm literally crafting these characters based off of what people are telling me they want. And so when I was creating it, before I even put the company together, I was already talking to production companies. I was already talking to gaming studios. I was already talking to the comic book industry head writers and illustrators. I was already talking to these people and putting together this entire foundation before I even came up with the characters. So okay. that's where essentially I'm headed. So there's a kind of like a strategy to how it's going to go in terms of how each product and everything is being released, and like the digital novels will be coming out. And then I'm actually working on a new kind of product that I can't tell anybody about yet until we end of the year when it comes out. So there's some stuff coming out that's going to really, I feel, kind of turn the industry on its head. And then the games okay. will follow next year. And then hopefully leading into film as well. So it's already heading in that direction. That's kind of where we are. This isn't a new business model. Like, this isn't some new thing. We already know where superheroes can go, and people are already waiting to see superheroes on film, on screen. So right. there's no waiting for that. Like, as soon as I put it out, I'm already talking to the people to go ahead and turn it into live action. So absolutely, it's there.
Nice. Nice. Now, do you have anything digitally out now?
Not now. I'm actually releasing the book preview in like the next 2 days. When I did the interview with Madame Moir, this was actually, was it before Charleston? Ooh, that was before Charleston. I did an interview with Indie Weekly. I was already ready to put everything out, and I halted production on everything after Charleston and redid my whole entire project. Like, it just, it went from, my project went from being just me wanting to make multicultural superheroes to actually utilizing this platform to truly say something. So incorporating current events and real-life issues into the storylines to help people understand, you know, why black women don't like it when people come up and just touch their hair. Like, you know, just something as simple as that. And just, like, working.
Why black women don't like when you stick your finger near their food. Okay, I got you.
You know, like, just little cultural nuances, you know, how irritating I know Asian women find it when people assume, when men assume that they're submissive. Like, that kind of little stuff that people don't really think about, just taking those real-life issues, incorporating them into these storylines that feel like we can all kind of understand each other better. Because I feel like that's kind of where we're at. People are just kind of butting heads because they all think they know each other's story and each other's lives here, and that's not the case. It's frustrating listening to a white person talk to me about the black experience like they know. And I'm like, no, you don't.
Understood.
Yeah, so it's like I'm trying to use this as kind of like a teaching opportunity for everybody so they can kind of understand the cultural issues that women face, you know, and how they're very different, but then also at the same time how they're also very much alike. So just kind of helping each other understand each other better. Hopefully that'll, you know, start a dialogue to release a lot of this racial tension.
So the overall goal is basically understanding of us as a people, African-American, black, Negro, whatever you want to call us, a better understanding through the comics and the different situations that they deal with on a daily basis?
Yeah. So literally taking that and incorporating that. I feel like I literally created the universe based after the world in which we live. So in terms of, you know, there are Native Americans, indigenous people in my storylines. There are, you know, people from all over the world. The blonde black people from Melanesia, I incorporated them into the storyline. And I thought those people are so incredible, and it just shows how, you know, it's not any type of influence from Europeans. It's actually just a genetic mutation that occurred on the pigment of their hair, that they have 25% of that population, these blonde black people walking around with afros. It's incredible. And I incorporated that into the storyline as one of the main characters, and I was like, you know, that's something that people probably don't know, that they should know, that, you know, black people come in all sorts of shades of colors, beautiful things,
We come as light as a piece of paper, as dark as a piece of coal. That's our people, and the story has to be told. So, you know, right now we're listening to the voice of the people. The host is Todd Jones, co-host Mark Lee. I'm producer Dean Geronimo. We're here with Jasmine Truesdale right now. I actually got somebody calling in. Welcome to the voice of the people. Who's on the line?
Oh, you know your co-host had to call in sooner or later.
My man Mark, what's going on?
I am doing good. I'm glad to see that you have met Miss Jasmine and y'all are having a running dialogue and all of that kind of fun things. You can see why I've always thought that she's a fascinating young lady and is just ready to set the world on fire with her entertainment empire, as I like to call it.
Yes, indeed. You know what I mean? And has a plan, and that's the biggest thing. For, you know, I guess us, we can't run into the fire without some water. You know, we go in sometimes, some of us will run to the fire with no bucket. Some of us will run into the fire with a can of gasoline. And then when things blow up, we want to point the finger and point the blame. So you, Jasmine, you've actually, you know, you've actually thought your whole process through. And What's your first step, your second step, your plan B if you have to use it? You know, it sounds like you had everything already good to go, as they would say.
Yeah, she's definitely got things good to go. Now I'm jumping into the conversation, and I just wanted to some of the things that we talked about, like, you know, when I interviewed her for the paper and everything, so it's a chance for another avenue for her to expound on this, but I know one of the things that we had conversations about, which I'd like to hear her explain to the radio audience as well, is some of the feelings that exist that she's refusing to let get in her way for minorities and women, with particularly in the comic book industry, because I know we've had this conversation where there are not that many of us in the comic book industry. I think you named a few, but I'm sitting there going like, there's only that many?
Yeah, right. So it's hard, as you can imagine, when you're trying to come out with things. And me, I've never been one to down talk or talk ill of any company. I want to see DC and Marvel do well. One day I would love for my characters to merge with theirs, do crossover stuff. I'd love to see that. But just as a consumer and someone who's been buying their stuff for so long, you often see when people try to, you know, tap onto that multicultural platform that they're having people who are not a part of that group write the storyline, so they seem off to us. So we're sitting here like looking at Vixen, who's like their main, if not only, black female superhero for DC. And I love Vixen, and I'm so happy they're doing the webisodes for her. I was like, yay, I get to see her run and do really cool stuff. But it's like I'm hoping that it's going to come out well. I want it to come out well. I want it to come out authentic. But oftentimes, historically in the past, what has happened is they'll have, for example, a white person writing, like I said, about the black experience, and it misses the mark. They're writing based off of stereotypes. So us as black people, we're reading it, we're reading the comic, or we're watching the series, and we're like, this doesn't look right. This doesn't really fit us. So then we don't buy it. We don't support
right.
it. And then they use that
right.
as an excuse, saying, well, we tried it and it didn't work. And it's like, well, we know why it didn't work. So it's like I really, really want them to do stuff and, like, do it in a way that's authentic. And I hope that my characters, or even with the projects they're doing now, I hope that they're taking that direction. I want to see them do well.
Yeah, definitely, and I can see that. But, I mean, that's something that's been going on for a while. I think one of our conversations, we were talking about the fact that there have been people writing our stories versus us writing our stories for, seems like, forever. I mean, they've been writing our stories back in, like, the 1900s, and definitely during the blaxploitation kind of TV era and everything, where they were writing the stories. And, yeah, some of the jokes worked because they might have done enough studying to understand what some of the things that were happening in the ghetto areas were, or some of the urban areas, but some of the jokes definitely fell flat because you're sitting there going like, my uncle Bob lived in that neighborhood and I could never see him doing X, Y, and Z, whatever X, Y, and Z
was. Yeah. Do you ever watch those parodies on YouTube where they, I'm like addicted to those. They do these parodies on YouTube where they kind of like make fun of that kind of stuff, and they sort of like rewrite it as it should have, I guess, how they think that it should have been, or in a way that would be more authentic to the black culture. Have you ever seen those? They're absolutely hilarious. You should watch them. It's
well, I know that Key and Peele have done some parodies like that, and I've definitely seen some of their parodies.
Oh,
I
yeah.
And then I remember that the In Living Color people would do some parodies along those same lines, and they definitely hit the nail on the, what's the expression, hit the head on the nail on the head. So, I know that those things existed, and then like there was an old movie that kind of parodied all the blaxploitations. That was, I want to say Robert Townsend did it.
Was it Black Dynamite?
Black Dynamite was one, but there was one before Black Dynamite. It was like a parody of like the blaxploitation TV shows. Not coming to me the title of it, but I want to say it was out maybe in the early 2000s or early to mid 2000s.
I think I know what you're talking about. I'm kind of a movie buff, so like,
right.
I know I've probably seen it.
Coming to you, Dean.
You know what? I'm trying to. Yeah, I'm gonna have to Google it. Now you said it's not Black Dynamite.
It's not Black Dynamite.
It was like the. You talk about the one with the afro.
Right, that one.
What is it? What is it? I want to say, and I don't want to say.
Right.
Understood.
The only thing I can think of.
You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to figure it out.
I know that one was like sort of making fun of that too.
Which one was that?
In was Pootie Tang, but that was like, what was it, Griffin? Eddie Griffin? Yeah. Was that Griffin?
No, it wasn't that one either. Cause I'm
no, that was one. Chris. You talk about Pootie Tang with Chris Rock in it?
Uh-uh. Not that one either. But, this venture being on the computer right now, I'm getting ready to Google it and try to remember the title while we continue the conversation. But it's like as soon as I hear the name, I'll be like, that's the one I was talking about.
What was it?
I said as soon as I Google it, it'll come back to me, but it's not coming to me. I know the theme was definitely like a takeoff of all the blaxploitation movies.
Bushido Blade, are you talking about that one?
No, I remember that one too, but as soon as y'all say the name, I'll be like, that's the one I'm talking about, but it's not coming to me right now.
We're going to figure it out after the show's over, right?
We're all like...
of course. Everybody will be calling everybody, talking about, like, that's the one we were talking about.
Well, you know what? Maybe we could get somebody to call in and help us out with that. If you know who the actual, what my co-host, I'm the producer, he's the co-host, Mark Lee is the speaking of, give us a call at 914-338-0659. Help us out here, because you know what? We're struggling right now. I'm trying to figure it out, and I can't think of it to save my life. That's tough. See what happens when you start forgetting stuff, right?
You see, you start getting old, and you start forgetting stuff and things like that. And I just figured it out. I don't
know
what to think of
it.
It was a Keenan one. I just remembered it. See, Google is a wonderful thing, and it was actually late 1980s. I'm going to get you, sucker.
Oh, that was it.
Okay, got you.
That's the parody of the blaxploitation movie that I was trying to remember.
You threw me off at the Robert Townsend.
Right. Well, you know, Keenan, Robert, all kind of that same generation. So I'm trying to remember
you
who
know
did
what?
It.
Oh,
didn't
see.
I'm thinking of.
But Townsend also did one that was a parody of like the TV industry.
That was Hollywood Shuffle.
Hollywood Shuffle, right? Exactly.
Right.
It had the Navy Y in it. I remember that.
Right.
Because I loved Good Times.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of Wilona.
actually just ran across Bernadette Peters at the National Black Theater Festival last Saturday. So about 5 days ago.
Oh, wow.
She was down there signing books and in the vendors market and hanging out at the National Black Theater Festival down there in Winston-Salem.
You hanging out with Thelma, dog?
Yeah, I was hanging out with Thelma.
Hey,
it gets worse.
Hey,
I didn't hang out with him this time, but 2 years ago, and he was there again this year. Huggy Bear was there.
Oh wow!
And the person throwing the party, the person throwing the party was Bird. And most people are like, "Who the heck is Bird?" If you watch Judge Judy, he's the buff bailiff that's in Judge Judy.
Is he like a real one, or is that like an acting situation?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Like, he's like a real bailer? Is it like an act? I don't really know if those things are real or not.
An actor by trade, but he is also a trained officer. So I think in his case, it is both.
Huh.
He actually has
wonder if those things are fake or not. Actors coming in pretending to be, because I watch those ones on the Spanish channel because they're really hilarious. And so, like, I always wonder if those people are real or if they're actors or whatever.
No, there have been a couple of things where they've come out where some of those are definitely actors, because there have been a couple of them that they have found have been on multiple shows. Like, they might be on Morton Downey one day and on Judge Mathis the next.
Because I'm like, I know you're not committing that many crimes or suing that many people. I was like, let's be real.
Can't be doing that much suing in the world. You know that.
Right.
Because actually, one of the people that was also there was Starletta Dupois, who was also in Hollywood Shuffle. She was at the National Black Theater Festival as well. She was hanging out. So she's one of the actresses that played in that movie. So all the people that were there, so that was a good thing to do and all of that stuff. And part of what was interesting, coming back to what Jasmine's talking about and what Jasmine's whole project has been about, is that was the conversation of a lot of even the established actors. Was the fact of needing to hear more of our own voices and the fact of needing to actually take claim to our own stories. I mean, it's all right for other people to write them, but take claim of our own stories and the fact that we need to actually communicate with each other about some of our plans and some of the things that we're doing, because too often people are doing either similar things or things that could be working in tandem with each other, but they either don't know it or don't communicate with each other. So, you know, if one person's doing one thing and the other person's doing the same thing, if the two join forces, it could be like an even more powerful thing.
Oh, yeah. Because wow. Definitely since I like started putting my stuff out, I've been getting contacted by a lot of amazing talent, like just young talent out there. I mean, 14, 15-year-olds who illustrate like veterans. And I was just like, oh, my goodness. And, I mean, these kids are like, I'll work for free. I just want the exposure. And I'm like, really? Hold up. Let me backtrack. But it's, you know, it's fabulous, like, when you put something out there, how it attracts stuff. But it's true. It is difficult when you're doing something, you know, because everybody wants to talk about Kim Kardashian and whatever it is that she's doing. Sometimes it's hard to get heard by the press or get publicity about what it is that you're trying to do to get that attention, to reach the people that you're trying to reach, to connect with. But, you know, someone should probably do something about that. Create like a little group or whatever where all of these talented minority people can get together and talk about what they're doing.
Yeah, and I know that there are a couple of groups that exist like that, and there are a couple of like Facebook groups that exist like that, and there's been talk about making some more established groups, because there's actually a group called Black Ops Theater, which is in Durham, and they did a group, they had a meeting, I think about a month ago, which is basically like the state of the arts in the black arts community in North Carolina, and ways to bond and ties, and from that, they're kind of creating other things that can be developed both locally, but also nationally and internationally. So there are groups of people that are trying to think that way, and hopefully some of those things will come to fruition. I mean, it's like anything else, not everything will come to fruition, but the more ideas that we put out there, the greater the possibilities.
Absolutely. That's what I always say. My answer is the only way to guarantee that something will fail is to never try it.
Right. And I think that too many times people let the naysayers get in the way, and the naysayers will stop you in a heartbeat if you let them.
Oh, yeah. I've gotten a lot of people telling me no about what it is that I'm doing. And I was like, well, no one's really tried it. So how do you know to tell me no? Sounds a little ominous.
Yeah.
So.
And you were talking about how sometimes publicity can be needed, and sometimes incidents can create something. And if I remember correctly, you were originally going to, and I don't know if you and Dean touched on this, but you were originally going to come out by now, but you pushed it back a little bit because of a certain incident that happened.
Yeah, I completely, I mean, it shook me. Because I was saying that, you know, when you're a millennial and you hear about people walking into churches shooting people, that's something they did in the 60s, not in 2015. So it shocked me to, like, my core. It kind of rocked me. I had to take a minute. I had, like, shut myself in my room for a day or two. I didn't work. I didn't go anywhere. Like, I had a moment. I really felt that. And I was kind of like this kid. He wasn't, like, some 75-year-old. You know, grew up in segregated South. Like, he was younger than me.
Right.
He watched the same stuff, grew up looking at the same things, and somehow he went completely left with his thinking. And he even had a black friend, which just goes to show you can be racist and still have black friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh, yeah. How do you go from there, of walking into a church and shooting? How do you do that? How do you get there? Then I was like, I'm one of those people always complaining about artists not putting real life issues into their work and wanting to be more socially conscious. And I said, I'm turning into one of those people. I need to start being more socially conscious of what I'm doing. And it literally changed my entire product. So now that is what I do.
Right. Because I can't remember, was the character originally going to be placed in Charleston, or was it Charleston came up after the incident?
She was originally placed in Charleston. I created these characters like December of last year. So
right.
It was like really eerie how this just happened to occur in the city where she was based. That was so odd. And I was like, I can't have this being put out, this product being put out that's supposed to be occurring in real time and not address this. It's like glossing it over. It's like
right.
saying that what happened didn't matter or it didn't affect anyone or, you know, this is an invisible evil. This isn't like Darkseid coming in, Superman and Wonder Woman punching him out. This is an invisible force that these girls are going to have to face. And there are a lot of invisible evils out there that, you know, as women we face. And that's what these, I kind of incorporate that into part of their fight. They're not just out here beating people up. They're also fighting invisible evils as well.
And speaking of those invisible evils, I remember in our initial conversation when we were meeting that first time at the BU, you were talking about how, and just slightly changing direction, but still somewhat related to imagery and everything, how, as you recall, and being a student of media, the whole Wonder Woman thing had changed. Cause I'm not going to lie, I'm one of those people that had a crush on Linda Carter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like they over time changed her. Like her lasso of truth was really a lasso that was supposed to get the wearer to do whatever she wanted them to do. So it's amazing how over time that lovely little thing of it was supposed to, I guess the guy when he was creating Wonder Woman, he felt like women had this very incredible power over not only men but women as well. And that there's, I guess, just something in us that gets people to do what we want without actually having to use force to do it. And so that was what the lasso was supposed to be about. And it went from being that to being a lasso that was supposed to make you tell the truth. And I was like, interesting how they kind of like downgraded the power of what that lasso was supposed to be over time instead of staying true to what it actually was. So that was one of those things I always thought was interesting. I look at that kind of stuff, and it makes me question, like, you know, why would you make a change like that? Why would you do something like that? Why would you downplay the power of this person? That's, I always thought that was intriguing.
And then we also talked about how some of the sidekicks had changed, because I remember that Robin's attitude, what Robin is now and what Robin is back when I was growing up in the 70s is a totally different thing. I mean, I think he even has a different name now.
Oh, yeah, he's Nightwing. He grew out of his Robin status, came into his own superhero powers, has his own series and everything. But the women, like, they never do that. Like, they kind of did it with Donna Troy, sort of, kind of, but she never really was kind of like Wonder Girl. We don't really know what they're doing, but that's kind of the point. She's kind of up in the air. We don't really know what's happening. Whereas, like, with the male characters, they're always very, very strategic. We know exactly what's happening with them. They're able to kind of come out of their shell. And the women, we don't really know what's going on. So it's like I like to see the same level of, I guess, character development with my females as I do with my males as well.
And they appear to do all kinds of weird things with the love interest, because I think that you told me that, which kind of shocked me, that Superman is no longer in love with Lois Lane?
No, they broke them up. He's Wonder Woman's boo now. They're the super couple. Now, granted, I'm not really having a problem with that. I've been kind of wondering
that
for a
while.
Wait, these guys are...
So, wait. He dumped Lois Lane, mm-hmm. and now he with Wonder Woman?
Oh, yeah. They did a complete revamp of DC, and I don't remember if they tried it and it just didn't work out, or if they just never dated. I don't remember. But the two of them, Wonder Woman and Superman, are together. And in fact, in like the new movies and stuff, the new animated movies that they do, they've been putting them together as a couple in everything, in the games. Like, they're working it in. They're like the new power couple. Granted, I'm totally for that. Because I always thought that it was weird that they didn't, that they weren't together.
So what's happening with Lois Lane? She just got kicked out the whole picture.
I mean, they're like friends.
They put Lois in the outhouse.
Yeah. I think they're friends or something. I don't know. I don't really know. Like,
Lois Lane is the side. Lois Lane's a side chick.
Lois is that one that they talk about is just your friend.
right.
I have no idea what's going on with that. Actually, I haven't been following the series recently, now that I've been kind of writing my own. But it's interesting. I was like, yay, when they announced it. I mean, people were hating on it. It was like kind of 50-50. People were like, yay, finally, because there's like a whole fan fiction, like cult following of like this Superman Wonder Woman pair up. And like now... people seem to be more on board with it. They're like the universal major.
And speaking of that whole cult atmosphere, I know that I went to a couple of them because we've had some in North Carolina around Raleigh, and I think I went to the one in Durham. Mm-hmm. there's this whole Comic-Con kind of industry that creeped up and has become like a really big thing. But I know when I've gone there, I do see us every once in a while, but I don't see us as much as I see other people. So I'm thinking that even on the fan side, is it that we don't feel like dressing up and being crazy, or that we just don't partake in the Comic-Con atmosphere?
I don't know. That's the conundrum, because it's like if I go, who am I going to go as? The only person I can go as is Storm or Vixen. I was like, that's it. I was like, who else are you going to, or Ahura? Like, who else are you going to? There's so little options of who you can dress up as a person of color when you're trying to go to one of those things. So it's kind of like, I still go. I took my mom. She had a blast. And I was actually on the panel for the one that they had in Raleigh, and it was the Super Women of Comics. And I thought it was interesting that actually during my segment, the room had a plus. I've never seen so much color in a room for a Comic-Con before. It was amazing. I saw it was white people, black people, Latinos. I mean, it was incredible, the different people that were there in my thing, because that's what I was talking about. And I feel like we're there. I just feel like sometimes when you probably don't feel invited, or you don't feel like you can go and, I don't know, really enjoy yourself or see anybody else there that's like you. Sometimes it's like if you don't know what you want until you see it. So if you
that's
see
true,
more like people going to Comic Cons, then you'll probably go to more Comic Cons.
Because I'm like wondering, like, and you would know better than me because you studied this as a as part of your developing your own plot lines and everything. But if you are, say, an Asian American or a Native American or a Latin American, who do you go as? Because I can't think of any comic book character in any one of those categories. Maybe there is one, but I can't think of an Asian.
Like one with Wonder Girl. They did an Indian superhero once with Wonder Girl. She was a one shot in a one shot. Like, I don't know. Like, I was literally a blip in the radar. But it was incredible. I thought she was an incredible character they could have totally developed. I just never saw her again, and I was like, that's a shame, because that would have been a cool thing. So
she was Indian as in Native American Indian, or Indian as in from India?
Indian from India.
Okay.
It was Wonder Girl. She was in Greece, and somehow some Indian girl was there, and became friends, and they both were superheroes. So, you know, and I was like, I'm hoping that with my characters, you know, I'll come in, bring them, and have a whole thing. And then I'll see a bunch of little black girls coming in dressed up like Paula, or a bunch of little Asian girls coming in dressed up like Amaya, some Latinas coming in dressed up like Ixchel. So, you know, I'm hoping, that's kind of what I'm hoping. I'm hoping to bring more color to these Comic-Cons, you know, that makes us people of color feel more welcomed into this genre that has relatively excluded us since its inception. So, you know.
And I think it's fair to say that it's not just excluding us, because I think that when we talked, you also talked about the fact that it's also excluded people of different orientations, which I think is something else that you are going to tackle with your comic book, from what I remember.
Oh, absolutely. My leading superhero, Paula, her best friend is lesbian. And Amaya, my other superhero, her best friend is a lesbian. And even though she's not a superhero, she is really dope. Like, she's that character. I don't know if any of you guys watched The Good Wife, but Linda, how she's just like super mysterious. She's kind of like that. She's really mysterious. She's that person that whenever they're trying to get into a building, or let's say they're trying to infiltrate something, she's already there. And you're like, how are you here before us? Like, she's that person. Like, she's really mysterious. You can never seem to really figure her out. She's kind of like a space pirate.
So she's the brother man of your comic books.
I guess, like, she's super awesome, and she's a les, and she's great, and the way that because I know some parents can be very uncomfortable about introducing this topic to their kids, I do it tastefully. So, you're aware that she is a lesbian, but in all honesty, I take her character, and I'm giving her her own thing. She has her own line, her own series, her own everything, and she has her own love interest, which is Paula's best friend. So that's, like, practically unheard of. Lesbian action hero. So, you know, so that it's literally a product that is specifically developed for the LGBT community. because I know that that's something that they want. I can't tell you how many women I've heard say that they, you know, lesbian women who have said to me that they would love to have that. You know, we tend to have in the in entertainment, there seems to be what I call lesbian relationship death. And it's like this thing where they'll put two women together to boost ratings, and they'll be super hot, and they put them together, and it boosts the ratings, and you have all these people watching. Oh, my God, great lesbian couple. And then something happens. Usually one of them is bisexual. She ends up going off with some guy, or one of them dies, or there's like this tragic something. They never get their happy ending. And I was like, that's unfortunate. Why is this? I've noticed this trend that often happens in Hollywood whenever they're dealing with lesbian couples. And I said, well, right. I want to create a character that is a lesbian who's really badass and super dope and actually has a love interest. So, you know, Superman has his Lois Lane, you know, she has her character, and they go on their adventures and do their cool stuff together as well. So that's already in the works of being developed. It's kind of like,
and one of the things I liked is you, and I'm sure Dean has already alluded to this, is that you've already put together this master plan, so you've already talked to some video game makers, and you've got, like, movies and ideas in your head and everything. So, as I called it when I put it on the Facebook post and everything, you're already building, like, an entertainment empire. Look out, Spike Lee. You thought you had something, but you only had limited stuff. I don't remember any games and video games from any of Spike's movies.
No, not at all.
Trying to gain access to everybody, like, especially because women don't really read as many comics. They're more novel readers, so the first books that are coming out are novels. And so I think I was telling you before, I was like, I have 75 years of catching up to do with DC and Marvel. They have this whole universe already created, and I have this universe that I'm creating with this whole mythology and backstory. So I said, I can tell more story, give more detail, more plot in a novel than I can in a comic. So I'm starting off with the novels, and then I'm going to be doing my next project that I told him I couldn't tell him anything about that's happening towards the end of the year. That's going to be really interesting. So it's kind of like pretty much getting all of these different people involved, all of these different mediums, from video games to comic books, to novels, to film, you know, just really exposing everyone to these characters. Instead of trying to force them to come to comic books, why not just meet them in their medium, create something for them in the medium that they're comfortable with?
And so, I know women are very much into, and I'm not trying to be stereotypical, but it's just a known fact, they're very much into soap operas and things of that nature. Why aren't women into comic books? Because you're right, you don't hear a lot of women rushing off to read comic books the way you do young gentlemen and everything. So in your opinion, why? And I mean, they're very colorful, they're very... they have great storylines, so why aren't women more into comic books? Is it because it doesn't really address them, or is it just because it's a medium that they never got exposed to? What's your opinion on that?
I feel like it's because, just as I was telling you before, when you have, let's say, white people writing black characters, and look at who the majority of writers are for the comic book industry, they're white men. And so when you have a white man writing, let's say, for Vixen, who is the black superhero, or you have a man in general writing for women, it's typically written off stereotypes and not off of reality of what women are. Some of the best writers for Wonder Woman was Gail Simone. And that's considered one of the best eras of Wonder Woman, when Gail Simone was writing Wonder Woman, a woman writing Wonder Woman. You have, like, the most dopest storylines. Just as a woman, I connected with those plots, how they were developed and the things that were happening, the situation she was going through. And that right there just kind of, I guess, touches on what that is. So it's, like, oftentimes the over-hypersexualization of the women. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, women are incredibly sexy. But sometimes it's, like, you're going a little too far, like, with the crotch shots and the comics. Like, you don't need that to tell the story. Like, it's just you're reading it, and sometimes you're a little offended by what you're seeing. Oftentimes, the comics are written for men. They're not necessarily written for women to read. So it can be a little turn-off-ish. But that's, I guess, my opinion as a woman to see the comics.
So you're saying the comic books are doing the same kind of shots that the certain kind of magazines do?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like, what kind of magazines are those? They're
that's
like
what I meant.
Yeah,
those kind of, those
yeah,
kind of,
exactly
those kind of
that.
Like blue magazines. They're doing the same
don't
kind of shot.
Like, it's not really. I mean, those that's for men. It's, you know, you don't see two women picking up, too many women picking up Maxim. So.
Yeah, that's true. Not many doing that. So
no.
just out of curiosity, let Dean take over some of the interview as well. I kind of like taking over somewhat, but I told you, Dean, my favorite comic book growing up was Wonder Woman. You know, I had that crush on Linda Carter. Who was yours?
You know what? As far as comics, that's all it was Wonder Woman. Really, for real. I mean, when you go into comics. You know, if you're talking about action movie, then you go back and everybody loved Pam Grier because she was the only one. Foxy yep. Brown, you know, like,
uh-huh.
You had Foxy Brown, you had Wonder Woman, so you had your chocolate and your vanilla, you know. But you didn't have, we didn't have anything else, really.
The only other one we might have had, and I did think that she was kind of sexy too, particularly the Eartha Kitt version, was you did have a couple of women that were the bad guys, but they, you know, they were sexy bad guys. So, like,
Captain. No, what was Star Trek? What was the black lady's
Uhura?
Name? Lord, her real name though. Uhura was a name, but goodness,
Denise Nichols.
There you go.
Yep, and that was it.
Yep,
that was it. It was like, you know,
because everything else,
the women's movement. So the '70s women's movement, the whole nine. Like, these darn women, you got to create something for them or they're going to burn down CBS and ABC and NBC. So.
And even when they came up, with new ones, it was like usually just one per show. Because I know that Babylon 6 had that one a woman character that was kind of hot. I can't think of her name. I want to say it was like 7 or something like that.
But, yeah, that's kind of how it's done in Hollywood. That's why I did it the way I did it, with the group, because that's how women are. We move in groups. How often do you see just one lone woman anywhere? It's usually with a bunch of women. I mean, even I can meet a woman right now,
you got a point.
And the two of us can go to the bathroom together in a group. Like, I mean, that's how women move. But in movies, the same thing that they do with, like, people of color, it's like if it's a movie full of guys, they'll have one girl. Can't have more than one girl, and if they do have more than one girl, they're usually pitted against each other in some way. They're rivals somehow. They're never friends, or they never get along. Or, you know, with people of color, how often do you hear of, you know, Halle Berry or Samuel L. Jackson saying, there's already a black person in the movie, they're not going to add another person of color, it's too much brown, it's too much color. You hear that all the time. I mean, in Hollywood itself can be really racist at times.
Oh,
yeah. Stuff that we deal with all the time is that tokenism that they consider to be diversity that is not real diversity.
Or
so,
even sometimes when they do diversity, you forget about the people. Like coming back to the National Black Theater Festival, one of the people that we ran into, because she had her one-woman show there, was Richard Pryor's daughter, Rain Pryor. And Rain's claim, other than being Richard Pryor's daughter, is that she was in head of class. And people forget that there were about, like, because I had forgotten, that there were like about 5 or 6 black characters in head of the class.
Yeah, you know what? I sure did forget that.
I've seen it, and I don't even remember it. That is very true.
You know, like, when you hear something, you're like, for real? You lying.
And I think they kind of do that on purpose in case it doesn't work out with somebody else that's supposed to be just good. Or they're interchangeable. They're replaceable. Took this class in like black film, and that was like one of the topics they discussed, and how they create token diversity, and then make the character forgettable enough that if something happens, just kill them off or place them with somebody else, and the show can continue on as normal. Bad, but hopefully, I see change. I see Hollywood heading in a better direction.
Wow.
Now that we have. What is it? Power and Empire and Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder that gives me so much life every Thursday. So, yeah. I could lot of good things. Megan Good's now in, what is it, Minority Report that's supposed to be coming out, and then Sleepy Hollow. I was like, oh my gosh, I've never seen so many black people on TV. It's incredible. And so, like, I was like, wow. Nice. Hollywood's moving in a diversified direction. Now if we could just add a couple more Latinos, stop treating Asians like they don't exist, and Native Americans like they're some sort of mythical creature, then we'll really be heading in a good direction. So.
That's true.
Have you noticed that? They treat Asians like they completely don't exist.
Yeah, even though it's the majority population, or it's about to be the majority population, they don't exist at all.
Yeah, it's incredible. And, you know.
They give them no love.
The men are asexualized. They never have, like, wives. Or if they're wives, they do have wives. Their wives are, like, Asian, like, super, super, super Asian. Like, it's just the whole stereotypical thing. It's sad. But that's what I was like, I hope with my stuff that I can kind of show people that, yes, we're all human. And we're all here. So let's just try to get through this life and be as nice to each other as possible. Just the hate just doesn't make any sense.
No, the hate makes no sense. And then we play in each other, and then we play through our own stereotypes. I was having this conversation earlier today with somebody that, while I respect him as a business entrepreneur, I personally have a couple of issues with Tyler because I think he just plays into our own stereotypes.
Yeah. I can admit that there's one thing to play into the stereotype, and then it's another thing to kind of, like, take it to the left. But, I understand. I understand why he does what he does. From a marketing perspective, I get it. And I have to admit, I find Madea a little funny, too. So, because at first I was like, I don't really get it. But, you know, I get it from a marketing.
I get it from a marketing standpoint. It's just from the, like, us portraying our own image standpoint that I don't quite get it from. And that's where I think he needs to work on. But that's just my personal opinion.
But the good thing is that it allows him to do amazing stuff like Why Did I Get Married and For Color Girls, which I literally was just watching before I made this phone call. And that movie is absolutely incredible. But, you know, thanks to Madea money, he has the power and the clout to create really gritty work that a lot of our black actresses can just kind of really sink their teeth into. So, you know, it has its pros and its cons. Don't knock the hustle.
Yeah. He's getting his grind on. That's very true. He's definitely doing that. Yeah.
All good stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so, Dean, eliminating the women comics, who was your favorite comic growing up?
Iron Man, bro. That was my thing right there. Iron Man and I like. And I guess I'm a little weird, man. I like Archie comics. How about that?
Ain't nothing wrong with Archie. I need to get into Archie. You were the one that had to crush off. You were the one that had to crush off Veronica.
And you know what? And it was interesting because I used to like always get those spurts, and then, you know. Ended up getting away from it, started playing sports, and that took up most of the time. But I like I said, I like Iron Man. I like the G.I. Joe comics and Archie comics.
And I can't talk because I was a science fiction buff growing up, so you know that meant that I had to like the Jetsons. I'm still waiting for those super cars.
I'm still waiting to do a live action of the Jetsons because they did that for the Flintstones. I want my live action Jetsons. That's what I want. I want them to do that. That would be dope. Disney should hop on that.
Live action Jetson, I can see that.
That would be awesome.
And then, of course,
they have to do it right, though.
Yeah, they have to do it right. Because, I mean, I'm going to admit it. I mean, yes, I like the movie versions of Batman, but I'm a child of the 70s, so I also like that old campy, and I do mean it was campy, version of Batman, complete with the, you know, bam, wham, and all the little words that come up after each hit.
I love that one. Oh my goodness. It was funny because at first I thought like Eartha Kitt was the only Catwoman, But I was watching, I think it was, what was it? An episode of, gosh, what is that episode? It's an episode of one of the shows, the show from the 80s, and I saw this woman, and I was like, she looks really familiar. And she's this really tall woman, she had blonde hair, and she was like the first Catwoman in the first season. And she kind of looks like a cat. And I was like, wow, she really looks like a cat. Like, that's really what she looks like. And so I just happened to kind of go back, and I was looking, I was like, oh, wow, that's like the first Catwoman. Apparently, she only lasted a season, and then after that, they brought in Eartha Kitt, and she just...
She took it over after that.
Everybody forgot about who the Catwoman was.
Yeah.
They were like, Catwoman is Eartha, it's Eartha and nobody else.
Right. We completely forgot about the other one.
And then
what other one?
He's like, what other
one? What other one?
Because people forget how impactful cartoons, the comic books have been. Because, I mean, I'm like I said, being right. A child of the 70s, I grew up on Zoom and Electric Company. And, yes, grew up on It's Not Just a Bill. And those the conjunction junctions were nothing but cartoons.
Yes.
Schoolhouse Rock, bruh.
Yep, Schoolhouse Rock.
Yes, that was it.
I love that. Rita Moreno. I'm such an old school buff. Like, all of this was definitely before I was even born. But, I know exactly what you're talking about. I, like, grew up watching a lot of that stuff. My grandmother made sure that I watched it. And I liked it. Mark, I told you before, like, you know, I love film. I love entertainment just throughout the years. A lot of the stuff I watched from, like, the 40s and black and white, like my favorite actually growing up was like Elizabeth Taylor and Dorothy Dandridge. So my dad used to come downstairs and was like, gosh, can we get something with some color on this screen? Because everything I would watch would be in black and white. So,
Julie Newmar. That's the woman you're trying to remember.
Yes.
Julie Newmar was the original Catwoman.
Yep.
And the scary thing is that you can visit Julie on Facebook. I'm on her webpage.
Wow.
It's got photos. It's got media and news press. Julie writes, so maybe she's still living. And then it says, visit Julie. And on the julienewmark.com, it says, visit Julie on Facebook.
Get out.
Yeah, she's a fascinating woman. It says, as an 11th century American and a Mayflower descendant. So she was one of the original Mayflower people. Julie Newmar has beauty, brains, and a charming sense of humor. Born Julie Shaylane Newmeyer in Los Angeles, her father, Donald, was an engineering professor and head of the phys ed department and head football coach at L.A. Community College.
Huh.
He was on the L.A. Buccaneers.
That's
he was on the
was.
L.A. Buccaneers Wonder Team.
That's
and her mother,
her
mother was a Ziegfeld Follies girl.
Oh, wow. By, really back, like Vaudeville.
Yeah, said by Eddie Cantor to have the most beautiful legs in the Follies. So apparently that leg thing was going on with her mother as well.
She was a very beautiful girl, and that's where I saw her on an episode of Heart to Heart. That's what it was. She was one of your beautiful bad girls, Mark.
Uh-huh.
She kidnapped Jonathan Hart. It was kind of funny. But I was like, gosh, she looks familiar, and that's exactly where I saw her. She's eight.
And sure enough, I just clicked on the Facebook page, and it's actually there. It's a picture of her as an older lady, blonde with red lipstick. But, yes, it's still definitely the frame of, and probably in her 80s or 90s now. But she has her own actual page that you can follow.
That is fabulous. It's Julie Newmar.
Wow.
You'll have to reach out to Julie. Maybe she can be a character in your next something.
Who knows? She could. She could come from realm. She would come from realm 4. That's the Europeatic realm that explains Europeans. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, and I know that Ty usually does it. And by the way, where did Ty disappear to this time, Dean?
You know what? That's a good question, and I've been thinking about that. I was going to ask you, but
last time we were going to have the mystery writer sit on her, and we haven't talked to Elizabeth yet, but we think that she needs to write a novel about where she's at. I think that Jasmine might have to write a cartoon as to where she's at. You know, the whole Where's Waldo, Where's Ty?
Exactly. So we're gonna find out where she may be, right?
She has disappeared on us once again, but, you know, throughout the course of the show, we always tell our guests to tell people where they can find their information at. So I don't know if you probably didn't get to that at the beginning. But, Jasmine, if the people are interested in the comic book and want to find more about it and the whole media empire, because you're going to be bigger than Spike, bigger than Quincy Jones, bigger than all of those people combined, where can they find
it? Right. They can go to azacomics.com, azacomics.com. And they can also follow me, Jasmine Truesdale. It's my Twitter handle, J-A-Z-M-I-N. And pretty much everything is there. You can always also go to jasminetruesdale.com. That's my website. You can see about all the other projects that I'm doing, my other companies as well. Yeah, pretty easy to get in contact with. I try to be as available and as approachable as possible, especially for people who want to get into business or want to know about business. I'm as available as possible.
And how do you blend all these different jobs? Because we've had this conversation before. You know, you're not just till you're at, most people that do this entertainment thing, they do the entertainment thing and then they got like one side job. They might be a bartender. They might do like some teaching, something like that. But you've actually got like three businesses that you're running at the same time. Because for all I know, you could be launching four and five, but you already got the business of the comic books and the whole media stuff, but then you've done a variety of other things that were a part of your degrees as well. So why don't you tell Gene some of the other things that you've done so he could be even more blown away?
I started off working as a portfolio manager and risk analyst for Wells Fargo. So my background is in risk, and I was doing all of that where I was going to school. So I have like three degrees. I'm like the most overeducated person you'll ever meet. I've finished my MBA recently. So pretty much from there, it actually started because I couldn't find work. So I had a two-page resume by the time I was 24, and I could not get a job. So I just created my own job. So I started off doing consulting work for financial real estate. So then I just developed my own consulting firm from that. So I actually helped entrepreneurs find investors. I helped build their business plans, build their foundation, build all of that. And then I did my fitness company because that was my first degree. I originally went to school to be a doctor. Decided I was better at business. I liked business more. And then from there, that spawned the whole comic book thing. And then because I have a background in real estate, going to that. So it's a lot. it's a lot. I manage my time really well. I'm very OCD about time. Like, Google is my best. My Google Calendar is my best friend. So,
And so you've got everything covered. So that means that you can assess and risk your own projects. And once you're done and you've got everything done, you can use your real estate license to get your own property.
Boom! Right. There you go.
And you can serve as your own lawyer.
Actually, a lot of my friends are lawyers. So, and they're good. Like, they're good. And one of my friends, I would never want to go into a courtroom and have to be, like, opposing her in any way. Like, she is that dope. So, I have a lot of really amazing people around me who do a lot of different things that actually kind of fall into place with my business stuff as well. So, I'm very blessed. I always felt like I had a sense of purpose. I always feel like God puts people in the right places where they need to be. And that's kind of where I am now.
See, Dean can relate to this because when Dean's not producing the show, Dean is making sure that the corrections people are acting right in that. Which prison system are you working at as a correction officer? Where you're trying to make sure that everybody acts right?
I'm in the Department of Corrections, brother, and I've been there 16 years. Trying to get people, I guess, right so that when they leave, they never come back. It's been a unique journey, but a rewarding one just the same. So, yeah, I can't complain. I won't complain. It won't do me any good. But, as far as multitasking, I know about that too. You know, we're always doing more than one thing at one time, and sometimes we got to remind ourselves to kind of slow down.
Yeah.
because if we don't, you know, can't do too much when we take that final nap. You know what I mean? But while we're here, what mark and what impression will we leave?
Right.
And in the book of your life, how do you want your story to read? You know, so it's very interesting. You know, like, I mean, everybody has a different ways of getting their messages across. You know what I mean? Mark, you have your column, and Jasmine, you have your comic, you know, and then we all put them together and we made one big melting pot of knowledge that we can right. share, that we can spread to others, you know, and hopefully we get an understanding from those who do not look like us, and a sense of community for those who do look like us. So, right. you know, we try to get it all together. You know, again, very happy that, you know, you've been with us tonight. You know, I started it off. I was trying to think of some questions in my head, like, what do I ask someone who, and then she said, you know, she already had her plan. I was like, uh-oh. Kind of threw me off, but we did it. We definitely grateful for you having that type of vision, you know, because you found a need that needs to a void that needs to be filled, and you know, you come bringing that to the world. So that's a beautiful thing right there.
Thank you. I definitely try. It's very much my dad. He's a planner, and he's always told me you can do anything in this world as long as you make a plan. So me, with that
mm-hmm.
plan, and just because of my risk background, I have always had plans B, C's through Z's. Like, I'm already thinking about, okay, this doesn't work out. What's the backup? What are we doing? What's happening? Like, so definitely, that's all my dad.
But you had also told me that your mom and your sister have played a role in the whole planning as well. I think your sister was somebody that you kind of think about, if I remember correctly, when you're thinking of some of these characters, and she's a younger person than even
you.
I
run all my characters by my sister. She's 5. And I was like, okay. Like, when I was creating one of the characters, her favorite is Adana, because she has this Adana's from Mumbai, and a lot of Indian women, the traditional hairstyle would be like the long braid. So she has this ponytail with this long braid that can extend out into almost like a whip. That's like her go-to weapon, her go-to weapon of choice. And my little sister absolutely loves it. And so when I was telling my illustrator, okay, I want her drawn up like this, and I presented it to my sister, I was like, okay, what do you think? And she's like, oh, what's her name? She's awesome. And I was like, okay, good. I made a good person. When the 5-year-old likes it, you know she made a good person. So,
oh yeah,
yeah, that's absolutely.
So you got that, Dean. All your kids are going to be buying this comic book as soon as it's done.
You know what, that's a good thing, and you get to see something other than the madness that goes on that we usually see, that we want to get rid of, that we can't get rid of. It's always going to be there. So now there's another option of something that looks like us, talks like us, behaves like we do. And I guess it's easier on the palate for some,
right.
if you will.
Yeah.
You know, so, because a lot of times, what's the question?
What did you say the target range was, Jasmine, for the for the comic book? I know we talked about that, but I forgot already.
For the digital novels, it's actually teenagers, tweens, teenagers, and older. I can't tell you how many, like, 30s and 40-year-olds who actually have interested, like, hitting me up and were interested. And for the children's books, those are more, like, single digits, 7 and younger. So I try to incorporate it for everyone, because a lot of the topics I'm discussing are kind of a little more grown, but they're kids who are still dealing with these topics. So you can't sweep it under the table like it doesn't exist. I wanted to create situations that deal with issues that I know teenagers are going through that, you know, some adults are saying, oh, it's too much, you know, but I'm like, no. When you have this 13-year-old girl who's being raped, clearly that's something that needs to be discussed. So right. I don't go into depth or detail or anything. I'll tastefully touch on the subject, but talk about it in a way from an aspect of triumph. Oftentimes you hear about the girl who experienced it and now she's pregnant, or she experienced it and she's trying to get the guy in jail, or there's some situations, some tragic ending. I wanted to talk about, you know, situations that can be that serious, but from an aspect of triumph, of how she overcame this, how she fought back, how she didn't let him, you know, do whatever he wanted to do with her or whatever, showing girls that they don't have to just, you know, let things happen to them. They can fight back. So I do touch upon, you know, topics that are just that serious and incorporate them into storylines that are tasteful so that girls can be inspired to fight against their situations or their circumstances.
So you do talk about bullying and stuff like that.
Talk about bullying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, alone, I've dealt with child abuse. I mean, but it's done through a form of entertainment. So, I mean, just one of the characters off the top of my head, like, she's literally kidnapped from the time that she's a teenager, and she's held captive by the main villain for, like, 20 years. But by no means does she let that situation of being held prisoner get to her. She clearly demonstrates she has power over this guy. She knows what her power is. She is talking smack to him right and left. Like, there's a comedic aspect to it that she just refuses to let her situation beat her down. And I kind of modeled that after the women of slavery, you know, that civil disobedience of, I'm not going to pick this cotton today, and that's just too bad for him. Like, you know, just the, like, different little things, subtle things that people do to overcome their situations and so that people can be strong in different ways. So I incorporate things in there. I definitely have a lot of comedy going on throughout the books. Like, I want comedy to kind of be the basis of this. So people can, the topics are easier to swallow. Dealing with heavy topics, but lacing them in a little comedy so they're easier to swallow, but you still get the message. So, absolutely.
You'll understand the message that the people understand the message that's trying to get through, but give it a little bit of lightheartedness as well, so it's not like the overhanded preachiness that some things can have happen.
There's no preachiness in this at all. In fact, I shy away from it, and if it sounds preachy, I'd rewrite it. I was like, I don't even, absolutely not. I don't believe in stating the obvious. I believe in just proving it through action. I don't have to sit here and say girls are equal. I just write characters who prove that they are every day. So, absolutely.
Definitely, like I told you, she's got her stuff together, and she's going to conquer the world.
From your mouth to God's ears. I'm confident that this will definitely be something that people will enjoy. I'm like, even if only black people read this, to me that's enough to just show that, you know, there's something for you to read. Or if an Asian girl picks this up and say, you know, hey, I can be whatever I want to be in this world, then that's enough for me. So, absolutely.
So some Asian girl may read that cartoon character, read some of the powerful people that you have put in the cartoon and be like, hey, I can be the first Asian mayor of Durham.
Boom. There you go.
So it could inspire people in all kinds of ways. So like I said, somebody Native American may read it and be like, I can actually go over there and be the president of one of these big Fortune 500 companies over in RTP or one of these other industrial parks around the country.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, you have Amaya, who's one of the characters who grew up on the streets. Like, she is the most hood Asian chick you'll ever see in your life. And, you know, I kind of wrote the characters fighting the stereotypes that surrounded their cultures on purpose to show that you don't have that, you know, there are girls who exist, who don't fall into these easy little boxes that they like to put us women into. So, I know Amaya, I love her to death. I love all of the characters that I've created, and even my stepmother actually helps me a lot with the development, and it's kind of like my co-creator. Like, she definitely talks to her friends and gives me input and does all of the stuff. And so I try to be as interesting and as I can with these characters. Hopefully that'll come across.
Well, that's a great way to have the attitude. And by the way, Dean, I did have a Facebook post back from Ty. She's saying that she's busy. I'm thinking that's code word for her telling us that the Joker and one of Spider-Man's bad guys have got her trapped somewhere. So since they've got her trapped,
yes.
Jasmine, you're going to need to get Kayla to rescue her because they've got her trapped somewhere. So she just said that
can't have that.
Yeah, can't have that. So,
girls.
Yeah,
she's got to send out the alarm.
Got to send out the alarm for the girls to go get her.
And all the girls will come. They'll come fight.
They've got to go rescue her because she's...
Brass knuckles. Amaya with her brass knuckles, her brand new brass knuckles. She'll knock somebody out.
So they're gonna have to go.
Wow.
They're gonna have to go rescue her because she sent me like some little cryptic message about having to go to work or in some session. I'm not buying it. I think the bad guys have got her. So we're gonna have to like find a way to rescue her.
Oh boy!
Oh yeah!
Oh, they'll come up with a plan. Kyle will come up with a plan. So definitely. Yep.
We'll have to find out, right?
So I think we've had about an hour and 15 minutes, and we were going for about an hour, somewhere between 75 to 90. Don't want to wear people out, but we do want to give people maybe one more chance to call in if they've got any questions. And I think Dean may have a couple of questions, and then usually we go with our usual ending remarks and everything. So is there anything that you would like the folks to know that we haven't shared with them yet, Jasmine?
Just stay tuned. I like to give tidbits. I'm always taking feedback from people. The characters and their backgrounds and stuff about them is available on the website, ozzacomics.com. The trailer is also available to watch. There's a long one and a short one, and gives a little background information of kind of what's to come. I'm doing the release of the preview of the book. Will be released on Friday so people can get a sense of what's coming their way. It's kind of funny. It took me a minute because I was searching through what I wanted to have people see, but I think I found the perfect scene that I think people will read and like and kind of get a feel of the level of comedy that's going to be kind of coming their way. So, yeah, and I'm always available, as I said before. If there's any ideas that people have that they would love to see in a character or a character that they would like to develop themselves, you know, and create this for the people. So I always like to hear from the people.
And I think either me or Dean can put that trailer on our website so people can take a look at it right off the Voice of the People website as well. So I think one of us can arrange that. What do you think, Dean?
Yeah, we'll make that happen. Definitely.
Cool. So we'll make sure that people get a chance to look at that, those that are regularly coming in and taking a look and things of that nature. So I know that there are definitely some folks that have that kind of background of, because we've had a couple of them as guests from the hip-hop and the multimedia kind of background that have still continue to listen to what we're doing and how things are going. So there's probably some people that will be reaching out that have been on the show in the past and some others that I know Ty is working on and that I'm working on. So who knows? I know we're talking to Ninth. Maybe we'll get Ninth to do a soundtrack for you.
Nice.
I know that
very
nice. Dean's got some of his boys that are doing stuff regularly over there, including the author out that are tied into that school he went to. That's Virginia State, right?
Yeah, definitely. And also with Ninth Wonder's Jamla Army as well. So, you know, there'll be a couple of albums coming out this year. So, you know, JamlaRecords.com. Check it out. And, you know, I had to plug that in there.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yep. So we actually, again, Jasmine, we thank you for joining us this evening on The Voice of the People and wish you much success, and we'll be looking forward to all the good stuff you got coming out. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for hearing me out. always like to help out wherever I can.
And we definitely appreciate you. Go ahead, Mark.
And next week we'll hear from Ty as to how Kayla busted her out of jail.
Exactly. And there'll be a cartoon forthcoming for that or video game. So coming to a screen near you later on, you'll be able to check it out. And Mark, you got any final comments before we roll out?
No, I mean, just kind of what I've alluded to during the whole conversation. We definitely have to work on creating our own images. You know, that's one of my mantras, whether it's talking to Jasmine or whether we're talking to our cancer survivor, Elizabeth, and things of that nature that wrote a book. But we've definitely got to find ways to create our own storylines and our own images and make sure that we're being true to the messages that we want to get out there and not let others dictate those messages. I mean, yes, they can tell the story sometimes, but we don't have to let them do it all the time because there's so many stories out there that are not being told at all. I mean, I grew up in the country, and how many country stories have you really heard out there on a regular basis in terms of from the African-American perspective? I mean, yeah, Hee Haw and those were very much a white version of it, but we haven't heard the black version of growing up in the country that much and everything. So, and that's just one example. There's other examples of other parts of the stories that are not being told, and we have to find ways to tell those stories. And I think your comic book and the whole video games and all of that is one of the mediums that can be used to make that happen. I mean, even if you think of Durham and the Research Angle Park, there are all them brothers and sisters that are doing amazing things out in RTP that are following in the footsteps and the tradition of George Washington Carver and people like that, but we're not telling their stories.
Definitely. Well, with that, I'm going to give you two quotes. The first one coming from Langston Hughes. It says, hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken winged bird that cannot fly, you know. And then we have Jesse Owens, who says, we all have dreams, but in order to make dreams come into reality, it takes an awful lot of determination, dedication, self-discipline, and effort. And Jasmine, you actually have personified those things. And again, comic book, looking for the video game, you know, make sure it's on all those formats, PlayStation, Xbox.
Of course.
And start getting our story out in the way we want it to be portrayed. So again, thank you. It is the voice of the people, ladies and gentlemen. Ty Jones is the host, Mark Lee co-host, shout out to Dr. J, our other co-host, and I am Dean Geronimo. Catch us next week at 8 p.m. We got anybody special yet, Mark, or that's forthcoming?
Forthcoming, I'm working on a couple of things. I actually was talking to the young lady that I was telling about with Black Ops Theater, so we may be having her, and
okay.
I'm also working on a couple of musical people, but I'll know more concretely by the end of the week.
Okay, not a problem. So, with that being said, Wednesday nights, 8 p.m., the voice of the people. Call in, join the conversation, 914-338-0659. Again, thank you all. We love you and we appreciate you. Good night.
Good night, folks.